I was reflecting a little bit about, for many people, the focus of this time of year is, that people say it's a season of peace. And my hope, of course, is that this peace doesn't have a season, and that peace is something that is relevant at all times. And from the Buddhist tradition, the idea of peace is very important. Buddhist practice is meant to bring peace, both to oneself and to the world around one. But the focus on Buddhism, Buddhist practice, I think almost always, has been to focus first on finding peace within oneself. Finding the peace within oneself, and then with that, going out into the world with that, and engaging the world, bringing peace to the world. But if a person doesn't have peace inside themselves, then there can be problems in going around and taking care of the world around. And certainly I've been in situations where I wasn't very peaceful, and then something happened around, and I responded. But my way of responding was so agitated and so alarmed in ways that afterwards I regretted, that how could I have gotten so excited, you know, sort of caught by the event. And and this focus on finding peace with oneself first, in a sense, the heart of the spiritual, if we want to use the word spiritual for Buddhism, it's a Western word, Buddhists don't use the word in Buddhist languages, but if you want to use the word spiritual, the spiritual focus or spiritual reality that Buddhism most focuses on is found in one's own mind, one's own heart. And that's certainly in contrast in many religious traditions where what is considered spiritual is found outside. One's relationship to that outside thing might be part of the spiritual life, but that the sacred or whatever is somehow external. And it's somewhat common to contrast the opening of a very famous Buddhist text called the Dhammapada with the opening of the Bible, the Old Testament, the Torah. And you know, where the opening of the Bible, it's the emphasis is on God as the creating force of the universe, and then God judges it. This is good. But it's the God that's kind of creating everything. In the opening of Dhammapada, the focus is on the power of the mind. And it's the mind that creates. It's not that the Buddhism claims that the mind creates the universe. Buddhism tends not to have a focus too much on the notion of cosmological metaphysics. But this is the opening of Dhammapada. And you might want to remember that the word mind in Buddhism could pretty well be translated as heart. And if you do translate it as heart, you have a little bit different feeling, reaction perhaps, to what's being said. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness follows like a shadow that never leaves. So here the primacy of the mind, or the heart, is emphasized. And then the rest of this text, the Dhammapada, it has just 426 verses in it, in some ways kind of explaining or working this out, how what we do with our minds and how we care for our minds has a huge impact on our psychological or spiritual well-being. And that the mind doesn't create the universe, but the mind creates the way we experience, helps shape that experience. And And it's quite humbling to read some of the studies from science and psychology and physiology, neuropsychology, to realize the degree to which the mind and our neurology shapes the way in which we experience the world around us, the way we experience ourselves. And that what seems so obvious in our in the field of our perception, and so matter of fact, is not so obvious a matter of fact when you start studying how complex the mind is and how the mind is capable of, in some sense, constructing perceptions of the world. A little simple example is, maybe some of you had this experience, I've had the experience of kind of walking along someplace and then having just a glimpse of something for a moment, and then knowing what it is. And then when I look more carefully, I find, well, no, it's not that at all. Once I had that with a snake, a very big snake. The snake was probably 6 feet long. And it was dusk, so that was kind of, you know, maybe part of the... And I thought it was a branch across the path. So I stepped on it. and then I jumped. But, you know, the mind can construct a certain kind of view, can see things. It said that it's been said, I don't know so much how this works, but that there's a very small area of our visual field that we're actually focusing on at any given moment. And all around that little area of focus, the mind is has a construction, a painting that it's made of what is the rest of the picture, partly out of what was there maybe a few seconds ago, because the eyes are looking around. But if something happens and changes off that narrow focus sometimes, you don't necessarily know that something has been changed unless the eye kind of moves to see it. So they done all these tests where they had text on a screen and they kind of track people's eyes. And then when people's eyes are kind of focusing on one particular word or text, they switch a word someplace else. And the people, observers, don't see the switch and still see that the old word is still there. So there's probably, you know, thousands of these kinds of experiments that show that, you know, the way that we perceive the world and experience the world is not so, you know, is not, the world is not always as it seems because of the tremendous power in the mind. I'm fond of saying that and today's the full moon, so that's partly why I'll say it. It's beautiful, it's a full moon. We might not see it tonight. But we say full moon and quarter moon and new moon, but the moon is always full. And but you know, from our vantage point, we say it's, you know, half and quarter or whatever, but the moon is always full. Or the earth, you know, we say that the sun goes down at sunset. Mm-hmm. The sun doesn't go down particularly. We're standing at the beach looking at the sun, and the earth is spinning backwards at tens of thousands of miles an hour. I don't know how fast it goes, but you know, spinning backwards, hurling through space. And no wonder we're dizzy, you know. So we say the sun is setting. So the same thing happens with our perceptions about ourselves, who we are as a self, the human being as a person. We have all kinds of naive ideas of what the self is. We have sometimes an idea of a unitary self, self as the agent. The self is who I am, right? And I am what I am, or something, you know, some kind of, we hold on to some idea of integrity around the self, but that also is a kind of construct of the mind. And some people's brains don't work quite right, and they don't have certain kind of basic things that we take for granted, and how the mind functions and doesn't work for them. And so, I know one thing is that there's a particular part of the brain that its function apparently is to identify my hand as my hand. And when that function of the brain is not there, a person looks at the hand and doesn't see it as their hand. There's an activity of the brain that makes that thing. I don't know if that was a good example, but there's a lot of activity in the brain that shapes and organizes the world around us. And it's so important to our experience of the world that I think that it helps us understand this quote by the Buddha, All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows, as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. So the focus here in this particular quote is not on making some grand conclusion about the role of the mind in constructing reality or helping shape it in some ways, but rather it's to focus on a particular area of suffering and happiness. And if a person speaks with a corrupted mind, then suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. If you speak with a peaceful mind, then happiness follows like a shadow that never leaves. And these two images of an ox pulling a wagon is a very tiring image. You know, it's a very heavy, it's a lot of burden, you're chugging along, it's muddy soil or whatever. And it's a lot of work, and it's tiring. The second image of a shadow that never leaves, it doesn't take any energy to bring your shadow along as long as the sun's out. You know, you can do it without even thinking, you know, and it doesn't require anything of you. That somehow the connection between a corrupted mind and suffering is one of a burden being carried with you. The connection between a peaceful mind, speak or act with a peaceful mind, and happiness is one that's quite light and easy and kind of floats along with you. Quite a difference kind of in feeling and weight. One of the values of developing a peaceful mind or a calm mind or a still mind is we can see more clearly what's going on. An agitated mind cannot see very clearly. And the analogy for this is that of a surface of a water which is all agitated. And then if you have a boat going through that agitating, you know, lots of waves and wind swept things, and a small boat goes through that water, you can't really notice what happens to its wake. Its wake kind of disappears very quickly in all the turbulence. It certainly has a wake, but it kind of gets absorbed and you can't see what happens to it. But if the surface of the water is really calm and still, then the wake of a single boat will trail behind it for a long time, and you see what happens to it, you see the effect. So when the mind is really agitated, it's hard to see the effect that our actions have. When the mind is really still, we can see the effect. And it can have a big effect on ourselves, on our happiness and well-being and our suffering. So speak or act with a corrupted mind, and suffering follows in your wake. Speak or act with a peaceful mind, and then happiness follows in the wake of that. And we can kind of see it, feel it with a peaceful mind. The emphasis on the mind in Buddhism as being primary is not meant to be seen that Buddhism falls into kind of the kind of philosophy of materialism, that's all just material and stuff. The mind in Buddhism is considered more spiritual. It's where the spiritual reality, where realization is, where we make the world sacred is through how we hold our mind, or how the mind operates and functions. The mind or the heart is something that's meant to be quite intimate. And part of the value of focusing on the mind, we're mentioning this, is we're focusing on something which is very intimate within us. Something, you know, people nowadays say the mind is not just in the brain, but it's all over the body. But the sense of presence, the sense of heartfulness, the sense of the mind, of awareness that resides throughout our pores, is something that's quite intimate. There's something very close to us. And so to emphasize the importance of the mind in finding how to bring the mind to peace is to find how to come very close to something which is intimate and warm and delightful, something that's precious within us. Someone once said that in the way that people often focus on their thoughts and thinking, first and foremost, many people are addicted to their thoughts and trying to negotiate the world through their thinking and thoughts. That it's kind of like a person sleeping in his or her house. And the person hears a really loud noise in the basement. and then wakes up to go and investigate and goes immediately to the attic. If we go immediately to our thoughts and try to figure things out, we're kind of missing often where the real action is. And so part of what Buddhist meditation does, or Buddhist mindfulness practice is trying to do, is just train us to drop out of the realm of thinking, or expand the awareness, be wider from the realm of our thinking, out of the attic, in a sense, so we can really investigate the fullness of what's here in our psychophysical being. And there's something very intimate here to be found that is not accessible if we're trying to think our way into it. Thinking can be quite lovely and bring a lot of pleasure, but thinking doesn't connect us to the visceral sense, the immediate sense of this mind or this heart, this awareness, which, you know, is much more expansive or broader or more at the core of our being than our thinking is. I think of thinking as being a kind of the outer concentric circle of the human being. It's kind of like you have this, throw a rock into a pond and it creates all these concentric circles that go out, and the outermost ones are our thinking. And we tend to live there at the outermost concentric circle. But if we can train ourselves to recognize and see the what's more central, the inner one, then we also begin to discover where peace is to be found. And peace is not to be found in our thinking, even though you can have peaceful thoughts. Thinking is not where the peace is to be found. And so to find that which is intimate, to come in and drop into the heart, drop into awareness, drop into the stillness of the mind, is one of the ways to begin finding this peace. In the Buddhist tradition, there's often been an emphasis, not an often, but sometimes a way of talking about the peaceful mind. It's talked about as a mind which is which is still, an unmoving mind. And some people's association with an unmoving mind or still mind is one of apprehension or fear. I mean, still mind seems maybe one that's frozen, or one that's, you know, not creative and active and engaged in wonderful things. But if you look at the idea of the concentric circles, the idea is that at the very center of these concentric circles, there's a place of stillness. And there might be activity and creativity all around that center, but the center is still. So the still center is kind of the cliche. And the unmoving mind. So that which is most intimate, that which is most precious in a sense, is something which is unmoving at the center, that allows us to observe and be present for everything else, and in a sense participate with everything else that goes on in the mind and the world around us. But we do it from that place of stillness, of awareness. To get a little taste of this, maybe, a little sense of it, or a way to work towards this, is to begin thinking of mindfulness as a movement of stillness. That when we bring awareness to something in our experience, no matter what it is, our breath, our body, our feelings, our thoughts, the world around us, that what we're trying to discover or do in that is to meet that experience with that part of the mind which is unmoving or which is still. To know something is to know something with a stillness of a mind. Now, the mind, most of our minds might be agitated most of the time, but that little kind of hint of where is the unmoving awareness this particular instant? Because there's something about the knowing of anything. In the knowing, there can be stillness. So for me, this is a very important point of view, because there's a very strong tendency to want to react to the experience, to get agitated, or to be thinking about it, or to push it away, or hold on to it, or do something about the experience. To judge the experience, judge myself, to be aware of something in oneself, and then it's not just simply awareness of it, and there's still the still awareness, oh, this is what's happening. But the awareness gets entangled with all the movements of the mind, the movements for and against that we can have. So the idea of meeting our experience with an unmoving mind is not to hold the mind frozen, but is to find that place of knowing which is not agitated by what the experience is. So even when something terrible happens, even when you have some personal insight that shows you that you're, you know, how terrible you are, happens to some people occasionally. You know, even that's not an excuse to allow you to get caught up in the agitation of the mind in relationship to that. We don't let anything being an excuse to not search for that place of stillness, the unmoving place or the non-reactive place. And that, I suggest, is a very powerful challenge. The challenge of not picking up any reactivity, no matter what is happening in the world around us. No reactivity at all. Oh, that was a terrible breath. Or, I can't do this meditation. Or, I think I better go defrost the freezer rather than meditate. Or, all these thoughts and reactions and movements of the mind. The mind, part of the mind, the outer surface of the concentric mind, you know, is a lot of movement. And we're so easily seduced by that and pulled into that. And so all things are preceded in the mind shapes our experience. But the mind is not what we think it is. Or we are not who we think we are. And it's, so can you kind of question who you are, question your experience for the purposes of finding how to get to the peaceful mind? If you're not at peace in your own heart, why is that? Why is it required for you not to be at peace? Why have you bought into something? What have you bought into? What have you adapted or accepted or latched onto that causes you to lose that place of stillness within? What has aroused you and caught you? Most of us can live most of the days aroused in the moving mind, in the reactive mind. It's not always so easy to find the unreactive mind, the still mind. But I think that when we start bringing attention to our experience, an interest to notice what is really going on now, what is going on now, see if you can bring with that interest, that what is happening now, a experimenting with that now, having a stillness in that nowness, a stillness in that awareness. What is happening now? And then make space. Have a little bit of space, a temporal space, a physical space. God, what's happening now? Is there a stillness here? When you lose the stillness, when you lose the movement or not have it, why? What are you galloping away with? What's the pull? What is so interesting? One of the most famous chants in Theravada Buddhism is one that goes, Anicca Vata Sankara Upadava Yodamino Upakituat Nirachanti Tesan Pupasamo Sukho. And it translated something like this. All formations are impermanent. All formations. And formations here can mean a variety of things, but one of the key meanings is all the formations of the mind, all the constructions and activity of the mind are impermanent. The mind is not hardware. The mind is only software. In the Buddhist view, it's so that's why the Buddhism focuses on the mind can be changed. It's malleable. The mind is very malleable and changeable. So you don't have to take it as a fixed thing. So all the formations of the mind are impermanent. They arise and they pass away. They come and they go. The stilling of these formations, bringing these formations to peace, is the greatest happiness. So rather than thinking that this peace, this stillness, the unmoving mind at the heart, inner heart, at the heart of our hearts, is an, you know, an unattractive place, because it's one of the, it's a great, one of the greatest, probably the greatest source of happiness that's available to who we are. The ultimate happiness. One of the paradoxes of this, the whole process of finding the still mind, the unmoving mind, is when the mind, when we get absorbed in the unmoving mind, the usual, or most of the ways, usual sense of self disappear. And the sense of inside and outside also tend to disappear. So when we come to the center where it's still, it's kind of like we explode outward again. And the whole world is, you know, contained within that stillness. The whole world is contained within it, within that awareness. Or awareness is contained within the whole world. So where Buddhism focuses, you know, has these verses where it focuses on the primacy of the mind, as it becomes developed, doesn't become something that's separate from the world or independent of the world, but kind of, it's kind of like you go into the center and then you come out and the whole world becomes yours. So the last thing I'll say is that what makes the sacred in Buddhism, what is most sacred, arises when nothing is excluded from awareness. When the mind is still, or when the mind's at peace, and all things are included within it, then the world becomes sacred. But if anything's kept outside, that's unacceptable. I don't have to pay attention to that. Or we keep so busy in focusing on one particular area of our life, then we've lost touch with that which is sacred from the Buddhist point of view. A fixated mind is not sacred. But a mind which is open, still and open, includes everything within it, is sacred. So what is that mind that can hold everything within it, that has space for everything? And what is that mind, and why is it so revered in the Buddhist tradition? So that's for you to find out for yourself. So may you all be peaceful for this coming year, and may you, if you're inclined, I'd like to encourage people to participate in that wonderful tradition of New Year's resolutions. And since intentions are so important in Buddhism, you might spend these days reflecting a little bit on your deepest intentions. And if today's talk somehow about the peace that's available in your own hearts can help you with that exercise of looking for your deepest intention, that would be great. And then come New Year's Eve, state your intention. So, thank you, and Happy New Year.